We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Fans, welcome to another episode of Her Hoop Stats Unplugged. As always, you're here with Megan Gower, and we have WNBA rosters for the All-Star Game, which is super exciting. So as a refresher this year, the game will be played as Team USA, which will be the 12 Olympians going to Tokyo, and then versus Team WNBA, which is the roster that was announced on Wednesday this week. So as a quick run through what those rosters are, Team USA, it's Ariel Atkins, Sue Bird, Tina Charles, Nafisa Collier, Skylar Diggins-Smith, Sylvia Fowles, Chelsea Gray, Brittany Griner, Jewel Lloyd, Brianna Stewart, Diana Taurasi, and Asia Wilson. And then the roster for Team WNBA that was picked by a combination of fan, player, and media voting, and then that list of 36 was then voted on by WNBA coaches. That list is Dawana Bonner, Liz Cambage, Kalia Copper, De'Arica Hamby, Brianna Jones, Jonquil Jones, Bani Jelani, Arike Ogunbowale, Candace Parker, Satu Sabale, Courtney Vandersloot, and Courtney Williams. So 24 WNBA All-Stars, Team USA was automatically all named WNBA All-Stars for this season. So today we're going to talk about Unplugged, what our WNBA All-Star rosters would look like. And we're going to take it a little bit differently than this year's format in that we're not going to pick like just outside of Team USA. We're going to pick as if it was a normal All-Star year. So there was just a normal set of players to select. So that looks like a voting, the typical voting is four guards as starters and then six front court players as starters. That would be split into two sets of five starters. So we're going to look at it from that perspective and then also look at the reserves. And to do that, I am joined today by Kevin Pelton from ESPN and Richard Cohen from our Her Hoop Stats team. Hi, Kevin. Hi, Richard. How's it going?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
I'm good.
Thank you both for coming on. So we're going to talk about the upcoming WNBA All-Star Game. The rosters were announced yesterday, but we're going to talk through who would have been kind of our vote for the All-Star starters and reserves for this year. So as a kind of quick refresher, the way you vote is you vote for the starters. So four guards and then six front court players. So we're going to kind of start with that and then talk about who we might also have in that reserve group after that. So let's start with the guards. Kevin or Richard, do you want to kick it off with maybe kind of who your top couple players in that category would be?
Oh, great. I found the forwards far easier than the guards. So we're starting with the tough half. First, Jewel Lloyd felt like the single most obvious pick to me. as someone who would have to start in this game with the season she's had in Seattle. Alongside her, I had Diggin Smith, Atkins, and Ogunbowale. But I could be talked into various other people. I had 13 guards on my original list.
That's interesting. I went in a different direction. So I mentioned before we started recording that there was someone who was an obvious starter who I had forgotten when I was listing out my picks yesterday. And that was Lloyd, who I just skipped over and was looking back at my stats and was like, oh, yeah, wait, where is she? I have Bird and Vandersloot alongside the two Notre Dame guards, Lloyd and Ogunbowale. I find it interesting, given your Skylar Diggins-Smith criticism in the past, that you have her above those two point guards.
It's maybe I got affected too much by looking at the numbers rather than using my head and how much I actually see the impact on the court, so therefore got swayed by the scoring. But Diggin Smith, in particular, this season, I think, has performed better than she did last year. The numbers back that up as well, apart from the three-point shooting. Certainly her on-court, off-court numbers are vastly better than they were last season. Her defense is improved. And obviously, she's had to carry Phoenix on the perimeter with Taurasi out for most of the season. So I can certainly understand Bird and Vandersloot, and they'd be on my team. But I think Diggin Smith has a case to be in front of them because of what she's had to do this year.
That's fair. So I also have Jewel Lloyd and Arike Ogunbowale. So it sounds like we all kind of agree on those two picks. But I have Vandersloot as well in mine. And then as my last player, I have Tiffany Hayes for what she was doing prior to the injury. Obviously, inconvenient timing for the injury. She wouldn't actually start in this game. But I think her stats leading up to that kind of earned her that spot, regardless of the fact that she wouldn't play in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I went back and forth on whether to include her as a reserve and just, you know, select someone else as a replacement or not. I mean, the fact that she is going to miss an extended period of time makes it a little tougher. Like, it's not going to end up being necessarily all that different in terms of timeline than, you know, Neko Ogwumike, who didn't get picked. And I don't know if any of us will have her, but that she was right on the borderline to me, although I was probably considering her more as a front court player than a back court player.
No, I was going to say, you could argue that she's been playing a three this season and therefore would be front. Like with, we're probably going to end up talking about with Benai Jelani, I think you could put her in either category and be perfectly comfortable with that.
Yeah, exactly. Lani is the one that's, it's hard to pick because she does kind of fall right on that middle line there.
Like with Kevin, I was wondering whether to include Hayes or not as a reserve. And because there are several other sort of worthy candidates, the fact that she's only played 11 games and some of them have played 15 or 16 puts her kind of on the borderline and I think maybe out. If we get to the reserves, she'd have been one of my options for the four anything picks after we get past the backup guards and backup forwards.
I mean, I think one thing that becomes clear in this conversation is there's a tier of, you know, probably six guards who have clearly separated themselves from the rest. I mean, maybe you could put Chelsea Gray in that group as well. And then I think there's a pretty substantial drop off to that next group of guards that we're considering for the reserve spots.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like this is a common conversation we have, like all-star conversations. It's like, there's definitely this like small top group of guards and then there's a drop off where like the front court, I always feel like you can't even like try to pick just six players. So the WNBA front court is nearly impossible.
Yeah.
And neither of you guys mentioned Atkins. Would you have considered her for one of the starting spots or do you think she's on that sort of that secondary tier rather than the top group?
Yeah, she was there before I remembered Jewel Lloyd. So she was a solid number five to me. I mean, I said, not a lot of separation in that top six.
Yeah, I had her on my reserves list as well. So she was in consideration for me as too. Me too. So it sounds like we actually have a fair amount of agreement on the guards. We all kind of agree it's the same tier of six players. There's just who we'd actually slate into there. So going more to the front court, I think this one is a little trickier because I think there's a lot more than six players to consider for the six spots.
You see, the interesting thing there is I actually found a top tier of six. I thought the starters, with maybe one exception, were reasonably clear, but we'll see if I can talk you guys into that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there were seven, you know, maybe seven and a half, because Nafisa Collier has played really well or has come on over the course of the season, but I don't think has played quite as well as the top seven. But there was one very difficult cut, in my opinion. So
yeah, six or seven, yeah.
Should we get into it? I'll go for it.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, let's hope we got the same seven. Yeah.
So I mean, Jonquil Jones is probably, and Breanna Stewart are probably the two easiest choices, I think. Griner and Fowles, the way that they've played, both have to be in there. Asia Wilson is the reigning MVP, and then Tina Charles was my sixth pick as a starter in the front court.
Same six I got.
Same six I have too. So I guess not much contention there. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't that hard after all.
And is Lainey the seventh for everybody?
No, I think Liz Cambage is the seventh.
Interesting.
Yeah, I had Liz Cambage and Nafisa Collier right ahead of Lainey, and then Lainey kind of in that A spot.
I mean, Lainey is an interesting case. We should maybe discuss this a little bit. Her advanced stats do not match up to her box score per game, you know, impact, I would say, thus far this season, partially because she's just, you know, does not get a lot of steals and blocks. You know, so that hurts her defensive ratings. And her on-off ratings, if you look at the other thing I went on by, besides my wins above replacement player metric, when I was looking at statistics for this, was positive residuals estimated contributions, which includes both a box score component and an on-off component. And she does not fare particularly well in that metric.
Interesting. I boost Lainey partly, again, as with Diggin Smith, for what she's had to do for New York with Ionescu getting hurt and then sort of playing hurt for a lot of the season as well. Lainey's had to take on such a heavy load for New York alongside Whitcomb, and she's basically stepped up. I agree she's certainly below the six that we mentioned, but I think she's right there for the group below and maybe threatening to challenge them. Cambage is so good, but so constantly in limited minutes, which knocks her down for me and keeps her in that second tier rather than in the top group.
I think that's probably the distinguishing factor between her and that top group. And that's why, you know, she didn't end up starting for me, but you know, in terms of warp and the estimated contribution with the wins total that factor in minutes played, she's still, you know, pretty close to that top group of six.
Yeah, I mean, even on her limited minutes, she's averaging very close to a double-double. Her production in those limited minutes has been really, really strong for Vegas. So I think she's right outside that top six. Doesn't quite slide in there, but very much in the conversation.
I mean, at the end of the day, though, like, you know, it doesn't really matter because Cambage, Lainey, we're clear right. That these players are all-stars either way. They're definitely in that reserve group.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to miss the game, no matter how it shakes out. So they're just not in that starter tier, which I think, like we've said, in the front court is just so hard to break into. There's just so many really strong forward front court players in the WNBA.
Yeah, I think our MVP candidates are going to come from that group, generally speaking. So, that's a strong half.
I mean, one of the observations I had about the All-Star picks when they came out on yesterday was I think that even though this is an unusual format, it's probably basically still the same group that you would have had under the traditional format, because Taurasi surely would have been voted a starter. And I think she's the only USA basketball player who would even be borderline in terms of, you know, you might not pick her as a reserve because of the time she's missed. But otherwise, everybody else is pretty clear.
I was going to say, that's very true, especially when you look at, you know, fan voting plays such a big kind of part in the ultimate decision of who's All-Stars, and those big names on Team USA are obviously going to pick up a huge percentage of that vote, so they would have been in that conversation anyway.
Yeah, looking down the USA roster, the only person I think on the 12 that we're going to have, well, apart from Taurasi, who's obviously been injured, is Chelsea Gray, who we could argue whether she gets in as a reserve, but I think she probably does, even in a normal year. So, yeah, that team didn't make a lot of difference.
And I thought Gray was comfortably in. She was, you know, if we're going to that next group of four guards, or backcourt players, she would be in that for me before I get to the wild card picks on the reserves.
Yeah, that's fair. Like we said, that there's just such a big drop off in those guards there, but she is kind of someone that plays it. Even if her numbers aren't quite there this season, she's still playing at a level that's above a lot of those others.
Yeah, the numbers don't always back up Chelsea Gray. She's sort of her advanced stats aren't always that great, but she steps up so much in the big moments that she's been important for Vegas.
Yeah, we certainly saw that on Sunday. She made an impressive case for herself in overtime of that game against the Storm that showed up.
Yeah, you must have enjoyed that one.
Well, what a great game.
Yeah. I think that was like Vegas' second overtime game in 1 week too, right? So exciting week for them in general.
She's going to be important for them going forward as well, because that's arguably the one thing that they've been missing, is someone who can create their own shot from the perimeter in crunch time when you just need to throw someone the ball and say, go score for us. So, yeah, again, and you can't argue against Vegas getting three all-stars, although obviously in the actual teams they have another one in the front court, but I'm not sure whether she gets in our format.
Yeah, I feel like Hampi is one that is probably on the fringe for me in case of making it for reserves. She could get in there. I don't know if she'd be a lock to get in there for me, but she is in there on the official roster. Four from one team, I think, is just really hard to justify, even if they are the second-ranked team in the league.
Well, you're really not going to like how many I have from Las Vegas then if we go through all these names.
True. I have the Jackie Young on my list of guards too, though, so yeah.
Yeah, Young was on my expanded list. I'm not... Yeah, I wasn't. She's right on the fringe, yeah.
Should we dive into what that group for the guards looks like a little bit more as we go into the reserves? Richard, do you want to remind me of what the rules were for how many reserves we pick for the guards?
The last time we had a proper All-Star game, it was four guards as the starters, three guards, five forwards, four anything for the reserves.
Okay. Got it. So let's start with those three guys, because I have a feeling a lot of our picks for the in-between might come from, or the ones that can be there will probably come from the front court. So three additional guards to kind of add to your list that we haven't mentioned already.
I mean, we have mentioned them already. I think. My group was Atkins, Gray, and Diggins Smith, so.
I had Bird and Vandersloot, who obviously you guys had as starters. And then I was leaning towards Sammy Whitcomb, if I'm honest. But yes, you can certainly make a case for Chelsea Gray, Tiffany Hayes, and others. I mean, Whitcomb's been really, really good in New York after moving over from Seattle. And again, having to take on quite a load with Ionescu out. And shooting incredibly well despite the amount of attention she gets on the perimeter, and playing good defense as well for New York. So I think she has a case, but maybe as an extra rather than as one of the three full reserves.
Agreed. I would have had her as my eighth guard, and she'll be in my wild card picks when we get to that. I mean, it's such a bummer that the coaches didn't get a chance to vote, and we don't see whether they would have included her. I mean, it's interesting. I think Whitcomb's case depends a little bit on how much you weigh past performance versus performance in the first half of the season. And that's probably even a bigger consideration with Marina Mabry, who hasn't come up in this conversation as yet, but was one of the most valuable players in the league for the first month of the season and has kind of dropped off a little bit since then. And based on her track record, that's why I thought it's kind of one spot between those two, and Whitcomb has surpassed Mabry in my mind.
That's fair. I also had Skylar Dean Smith, Ariel Atkins, and Berg. So yeah, kind of same kind of overall group of kind of top guards that we've been talking about. But I have Jackie Young also right there, kind of on the fringe as well.
And Young, you could again argue about, is she a front court or a back court player?
Yeah, so she probably slides into that kind of additional group of not the guards, but players you get to choose between later on.
Okay, so then we've got five front court reserves?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so that group for me would be... Dawana Bonner, whose name hasn't come up yet, but needs to be mentioned as well. Liz Cambage, as we talked about, Collier, Laney, and Candace Parker.
Interesting. One difference from my list.
Did you not have Parker?
I had Breonna Jones ahead of Candace Parker.
Yeah, I kind of decided on the fly because I didn't have them separated into a wild card and front court. They're both on my team.
Yeah, I have the exact same rich as Richard, but with Candace Parker right below her. So it's kind of all same group in there.
I mean, the thing with Parker is that she's obviously been good with Chicago since she's come back with Chicago, and it's coincided with their winning streak. So you can see the impact. But the numbers haven't been wildly exceptional, and she's obviously missed around about half the games, maybe a little less. So yeah, I felt that at least knocked her out of the initial group, and then you can argue about whether she would get one of the wild cards or not. I'm not sure she would in my group, but she's certainly in the discussion.
I probably put more weight on kind of long-term success and the fact that, you know, she was one of the very best players in the league last year, and in her overall historical, like, we know Candace Parker is capable of playing at this level, whereas it's a bit more of a question for, you know, someone like Breonna Jones, who's reaching a new level.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I tend to lean more the other way, but I admit that maybe, especially as sort of all-star berths is used as a historical metric when you look back at these players' careers afterwards, maybe you should weigh past performance a bit more, especially as the WNBA season is so short that we're looking at a really small sample size when it comes to picking these teams after less than half of a season.
I mean, you mentioned that, and it is a reason why I'm glad that we're considering this an all-star game this year. And I wonder if they're retroactively going to apply that to some of the games that were played in the past, where the WNBA put together a team of all-stars to hypothetically all-stars to play against the USA team, whether it was in 2004, I think 2006 was the other time they did this. Because there's this weird thing of like, Sue Bird has a record 12 All-Star appearances. Well, Sue Bird's been an All-Star every year she's been healthy in the WNBA. It's just some of those years they didn't play an All-Star game. And it's also especially disappointing they didn't name All-Stars even if they were going to play a game last year, because I feel like I can speak for all of us on this podcast and say that I'm bummed that Alicia Clark didn't get to be an All-Star, and given her Achilles injury, her age, it's possible that might not come together for her again.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think the fun of All-Star Q is way more about kind of like who's going to get picked and all that stuff. It's more exciting than the game, at least to me. Like, the game is, I mean, it's fun to watch, but it's just, you know, a fun game. Whereas like kind of debating the picks.
The game's terrible. the game is almost always terrible. The interesting part of All-Star every year is trying to work out who the hell should get in, not the actual basketball that they play once they get there.
There's no Clark's Corner for the All-Star game.
I mean, yeah.
Loyal readership. Gotta love it.
But yeah, I think they should pick them every year. It doesn't take that much effort to just pick them.
Yeah, there's no reason why they shouldn't. You don't have to play the game in order to pick the teams.
And as part of the 25th anniversary celebration, here's my official take on this. They should put together a committee to retroactively pick all-star rosters for the years in which there wasn't a game played, so that we can actually like fairly compare the number of all-star games that, you know, Lisa Leslie would have played in when they didn't play one in 97 or 98 versus Sue Bird versus whoever else.
Right.
And do you just use first half of the season stats to work those out then, given that you'd only be technically doing it before a hypothetical game?
Yeah, I guess so. How exactly you do that and who's part of the squad, I guess, is not clear. But I'm volunteering. I'm offering my services if they're desired, which they usually aren't.
Hey, if they want to give me a call, I'll join in too. But yeah, that'd be interesting.
Whoever's on that committee would need some thick skin on Twitter, I think, because I'm sure people have many things to say about it.
People getting retroactively upset about someone getting snubbed for the 1998 All-Star game would be very amusing.
But it would happen.
That would be great, yeah. I can't wait for the Andrea Stinson stans to start coming out on Twitter. Yeah, that would be great.
How dare you not pick Allison Feaster? Megan, did you give your backup front court players?
Yeah, it was the same as Richard, so I think we all have pretty similar groupings there on the edge.
Yeah, you're not going to get a lot of disagreement,
yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah. I think the last spot was the only tricky thing there. Was it Parker or was it Jones for me? I think for Parker, her numbers don't jump off the page as much, but just I think there's an obvious impact of how much better Chicago has been since she's been on the court with them versus when she wasn't. So even if it's not necessarily showing up in the numbers, which is a very clear difference in how good she made Chicago, because they were pretty terrible. There's really no nice to put it in, pretty terrible before she was healthy.
Yeah, you can't argue with the win-loss record, even if the... I mean, the advanced numbers said that Chicago were going to come back to around 500 even without Parker. But yeah, you obviously there's been a coincidence there when it's happened.
So I believe that means we have the 5 more spots to fill.
4 more wild cards.
5, I guess, if we take Tiffany Hayes.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, you mean given that she'd be replaced due to being injured? Yeah.
So to me, when I was going through those last 4 wild card spots, we've mentioned Breonna Jones and Sammy Whitcomb. Those were the 2 obvious ones to me. And then I think there's a drop off to those last 2 choices that were way more difficult and a lot of players you could have considered. One of the interesting things I thought looking through this is it seems like there's a lot of players who have rated well statistically in this first part of the season who don't have much of a track record and, you know, maybe aren't even playing that big roles. So Mabry falls into that group, I would say. Ruthie Hebert falls into that group. Sabrina Ionescu is an interesting question. I was surprised that she didn't get more consideration as relative to Satu Sabally. I mean, maybe Sabally has played a little bit better since she's been back, but she had the time she missed at the start of the year. Alicia Gray probably falls in that group, but ultimately I landed on 2 Las Vegas aces to give me a total of 5. I went with Hamby in the front and Jackie Young.
I admit I'm still looking through my list and trying to talk myself in and out of different people. I mean, the other people on my big lists in the backcourt were Chelsea Gray, Jackie Young, Mabry, Hayes, Courtney Williams, who has actually been really good for Atlanta and played a lot more minutes than sort of Hayes or Kennedy Carter. So you can argue she's done more sort of in total for Atlanta to try and carry them this season. And then I had Hamby in the front court. So I would lean towards Gray, probably Mabry, Hayes, if we're counting her despite the injury, and then maybe Hamby, but tempted by Courtney Williams, who also would be a lot of fun in an all-star game. You have to feel like she would be flying all over the place and doing all sorts of theatrics for the crowd. So putting her in an all-star team for an actual game would make sense.
That's fair. For me, it's Parker, because she was just left off of my front court reserves. So Parker, Jackie Young, as I've alluded to, Sammy Whitcomb, and then the last spot, I think, is the trickiest one, but I think I would end up going with Chelsea Gray.
So I'm not sensing a lot of Kalia Copper support here. She's number 2 in the on-off portion of that estimated contribution from positive residual, which is pretty surprising. But her shooting efficiency is pretty rough for a player who was chosen an all-star.
Yeah, she was on my original list. And then I started looking at sort of at numbers. And I didn't end up at the residual site. But yeah, the shooting numbers aren't great. And she doesn't even necessarily stand out that much when you look at the basic numbers on Chicago, never mind league-wide. So, yeah, she ended up sort of being relegated along my list and ended up amongst the sort of the possibles. Yeah, I talked myself out of Kalia Copper.
Yeah, I think, like you said, the shooting numbers are just a little bit too low to throw her into an all-star game, having a solid season for Chicago. And I also think just, you know, the way that Chicago started off the season too, like, doesn't help her case either. It was starting off that rough, even though they've come back from that a little bit. That seems to be more than I think due to Candace Parker.
I would say that hasn't stopped WNBA coaches historically from putting people like that in the All-Star game. What about Sabally? What did we think of her case that the coaches decided to pick her?
I thought that was generous. Yeah, and there's a bit of recency bias, like you were talking about with the comparison to Ionescu, because if you have your better games in the 5 games before people are voting rather than the 5 games at the start of the season, then people seem to think about it more and therefore they're far more likely to get in. I mean, we see that with awards voting at the end of the season as well. You're much better off having a good second half than a good first half if you want to end up all WNBA or start getting in the voting for all defense and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think another thing with Sabolé is, like, I understand the choice off of the list that the coaches had to vote for, because the 36 list, like, it doesn't have Sammy Whitcomb, it doesn't have Jackie Young, it doesn't have Tiffany Hayes. There's a lot of these players that we would say are, you know, definitely in this reserve conversation that weren't even really an option for the coaches to put in.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that 36 player list to cut many people out, but in the end it did leave a few options that coaches might have gone with unavailable.
And it was shocking to me that Jackie Young wasn't part of that group as a number one pick who went to Notre Dame. You'd think that, you know, she would get more votes than Kayla Thornton, for example. But, you know, that was an interesting group.
Yeah, sure. There's definitely some question marks on that list, which, I mean, fan voting.
Tara McCowan is a surprise.
Yeah. I mean, Katie Lucy Emerson, like, I know the UConn fans love her, but there's nothing about her numbers that justify that right now.
Yeah, it would have been nice if they'd given us the breakdown for the voting to see whether it was the fans getting some of these people in or whether they were helped out by the player voting and the media voting. It's always fun with some of these votes at the NBA over the years when they release the breakdown and you see who the players themselves just don't like around the league, when there's somewhat obvious who ought to be involved and then their name doesn't appear.
Or when you see that there was a first place vote cast for Derrick Rose in MVP, and it turns out that was the fan voting.
Oh, that was, yeah. Yeah.
Don't blame us in the media. It wasn't us.
Yeah, how do you feel about having an impact on how much some of these players actually earn on occasion, Kevin?
I would prefer that the NBA use something else is the criteria, but, you know, one of the things is people say they don't like having an impact on the salary. Well, you still probably have an impact on the salary with some of the things you write if you're, you know, not, if you're someone more influential than I am, but some of these people voting for all-star and awards, et cetera. So, you know, I don't think you can totally get away from that.
Yeah, that's true. There's so much of this ends up being narrative driven that what the media choose to write about definitely has an impact, whether they're voting for the awards or not.
All right. I have one last question. So going through the team WNBA roster, I'll read it off here in a second, but I think a lot of the players that we picked as starters are on that Team USA roster. So curious who you both would pick as starters off of the Team WNBA roster. So as a refresher, that is DeJuana Bonner, Liz Cambage, Kalia Copper, De'Erica Hamby, Brianna Jones, Jonquel Jones, Benai Jelani, Arike Ogunbowale, Candace Parker, Satou Sabolé, Courtney Vandersloot, and Courtney Williams. So I guess it's just one team, so it's two guards and three frontcourt players.
Let's see. Even though I don't think she's had the best season, well, Jonquel Jones has to be a starter. Bonner is the most sensible, like, small forward of this group. And then I think it comes down to Cambage or Parker. Even though Cambage has had a better season, I think I'd probably start Parker. She's just going to be more effective in that game and go a little smaller in the front court. And then in the back court, I would go with Sloot and Ogunbowale.
Yeah, if I was picking the five who I think most deserve to be the starters out of the 12 that they've picked, I think it has to be Jonquel Jones, obviously. Then I would probably start Laney, and it would be a choice between Bonner and Cambage for the third front court spot. I would probably lean Bonner, but I could go either way on that. The back court would be Arike and somebody else, probably Sloot as well. Yeah, so I'd be the same as Kevin there.
Yeah, I think the backcourt is pretty easy. It's probably most likely Arike and then Sloot. Those picks are pretty obvious. But yeah, frontcourt, definitely Jonquel Jones. That's easy. I think Cambage as well. And then I would probably put Bonner in that last spot.
And starter for starter, I think the WNBA team can probably go with USA in part because of Jonquel Jones, you know, her being as good as anyone in the league this year, maybe better than anyone in the league this year. It's probably that depth where USA basketball is going to have the advantage over this WNBA team.
Yeah, I agree. The starters are kind of on the equal tier, but the depth is a very different level, I think, between the two teams. But yeah, like you said, I mean, Jonquel Jones, in my opinion, just has to be the league runaway favorite for MVP right now.
I mean, the time missed is going to be an interesting question. Like, she's got to stay healthy probably the entire rest of the season, and we'll see if Connecticut can, you know, make a run at the top two in the league again. If they do with her back, then I think that definitely strengthens her case for MVP.
Yeah.
Yeah, where sort of Connecticut and Seattle finish in the standings as well might end up being important, because I do think Breanna Stewart is probably the closest alternative if someone wanted to pick one out to Jones at the minute. Although, I mean, I've seen people making a case for Tina Charles, or you'll see Asia Wilson again as well. But yeah, I would tend to feel that Breanna Stewart is probably going to be the main alternative pick to Jones if people hold the missed five games against her.
Yeah, to me, it's those two, and Jones has been the best player in the league, but Stewart, I think, thus far has been the most valuable just because of those games missed. But five out of, you know, 17 or 18 makes a bigger difference than five out of 32 when we get to the end of the season if Jones stays healthy.
Absolutely. And, I mean, Stewart might miss one or two along the way as well. So then once it gets closer, yeah, that changes the debate.
Yeah, I agree. It really seems like it's between those two. I have seen a lot of buzz around Tina Charles, but I don't think the Mystics are good enough to really justify that. And then also the fact that if Elena Deldon and Emma Meisman end up coming back in the later half of the season, that's going to kind of phase out her case quite a bit.
Yeah, it's so hard to win MVP on a mediocre team unless there are no other candidates or you're having literally an all-time season, or preferably both.
Yeah, somebody who was a part of the Lauren Jackson for MVP campaign in 2003 when the Storm missed the playoffs. It is possible. It can be done, but you got to be playing at a really high level.
Yeah, those Jackson seasons were arguably the best this league's ever seen. So, yeah, those are the exceptions that prove the rule.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you both for doing this.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, been a lot of fun.
Well, that's all for today's episode. Thanks again for listening. As always, you please rate, like, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, whether that's Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, any other place that hosts podcasts. Also, make sure you are subscribed to the site at herhoopstats.com for all your WNBA and NCAA stats. You can find us on social media at herhoopstats on all platforms. And also make sure you're subscribed to our free Substack newsletter for all of our best content in your inbox. Thanks again for listening.